Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 911, The Crimean Tatars, Pan-Turkism, and the Underground Reich. Update on the Earth Island Boogie. This is being recorded on May 26th of the year 2016. This program will be further developing a path of inquiry that we have looked at in one form or another for decades in, For the Record, 878 and 879. We took a look at the growing confluence between the Islamist movement and the pan-Turkist movement, and the embodiment of that is Tayyip Erdogan in Turkey, whose government is at this point a fairly overt Islamist dictatorship and is also pan-Turkist in its orientation. In turn, Turkey is a NATO country and is working with other NATO countries and other EU countries against Russia, particularly in the Caucasus, and as we will see, the Crimea. In a number of programs going back to AFA program number 14 from January of 1986, more than 30 years ago, we have looked at the pan-Turkist movement, its alliance with Nazi Germany in World War II in an unsuccessful attempt at getting Turkey into the war on the side of the Axis, and also in the successful attempt at getting many ethnic Turks, elements of the so-called outside Turks, to collaborate with the Third Reich against what at that time was the former Soviet Union. In the Cold War period, many of those same pan-Turkist and Islamist elements allied with the Gehlen organization, and that evolved into some of the present-day alliances that we are witnessing. We're seeing both the West and Germany, in particular, collaborating with the Tatars and other Turkic-speaking minorities against both Russia and also in China. The Uyghurs have been active as well. We have looked in the past and will review again today the collaboration between the Pravi Sektor, OUNB, fascist heirs in Ukraine, one of the power blocks in Ukraine, and the Crimean Tatars. In turn, we will look at the history of collaboration between Ukrainian fascists and also their pan-Turkist and Islamist fascist allies as well. This is an alliance that actually began in the pre-World War II period, as we looked at in AFA 14, and as we have reviewed in, For the Record, 878. Among other programs, we looked at the Promethean League, which was a sort of like a pre-Wackel-Wackel. It was sponsored largely by Pilsudski's government in Poland, also had very strong underwriting from French intel and a very vital presence in France. And in For the Record 782 and in For the Record program 878, we have reviewed some of the information from AFA 14 about the long-standing collaboration between the pan-Turkist movement and the Third Reich. We're going to take a look at that collaboration and where Ukrainian fascists of the OUNB stripe fit into that as well. The bulk of this program will be coming from the GermanForeignPolicy.com blog of May 17th of 2016. They have three articles with almost identical titles. The first article is called Auxiliary Troops Against Moscow, Installment 1. Numbers 2 and 3 are called Auxiliary Troops or Auxiliary Forces Against Moscow. And we're going to be taking a look at those three posts in detail. As noted in our first post, the main publicity that the Crimean Tatars have received is their deportation in 1944 by Joseph Stalin, the dictator, of course, of the former Soviet Union. What has not received a lot of discussion is the fact that large numbers of the Crimean Tatars collaborated with the Third Reich during World War II and even before they engaged in a conspiratorial process against the former Soviet Union. This was one of the things that precipitated ultimately the retaliation by Stalin against the Crimean Tatars. In the first of our articles, we're going to take a look at the military collaboration between the Crimean Tatars and the Third Reich. This, again, is discussed at some length in AFA 14 and was reprised both in For the Record Program 782 and For the Record 878. So for more detail on this, we can take a look. One can examine those shows. In the second of our articles, we're going to be taking a look at how the Nazi/Pan-Turkist/Crimean Tatar collaboration evolved into the Cold War period, where under Gerhard von Mende, a key Third Reich official involved with coordinating various Soviet ethnic nationalities in a German military effort against the Soviet Union, then put his talents to work for the Federal Republic of Germany in the post-war period, and inevitably with the BND, the Gehlen Spy Organization, and with CIA and its subsidiary elements, the Office of Policy Coordination. Ultimately, many of those same elements also collaborated with the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and the former World Anti-Communist League. The post-war evolution of the Crimean Tatar Pan-Turkist Third Reich liaison into a Federal Republic / BND / CIA / WACL collaboration will occupy much of our discussion on the second of these articles. The third of the articles talks about the ongoing agitation, really would be the best word, that the Federal Republic of Germany and the EU are engaging in vis-a-vis the Crimean Tatars in an attempt at destabilizing Crimea and Russia. The third of the auxiliary troops or forces articles by GermanForeignPolicy.com compares some of the agitation and some of the apparent covert operation with what took place in Ukraine in the run-up to the Maidan coup. We also took a look at the evolution of this dynamic in For the Record Program number 720, dealing with the book A Mosque in Munich by Ian Johnson. So, again, AFA 14, For the Record 720, For the Record 782, and For the Record 878 will give people a running jump on some of these connections. And by the way, the Earth Island Boogie is a name that I have given to an ongoing and overlapping series of covert operations, some of which I termed the Conga Line Ops, that is engaged at destabilizing both Russia and China. The Earth Island, of course, as we have spoken about so many times, is that block of land running from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, most of the Middle East, the former Soviet Union, China, India, and, of course, embracing Russia. Across the middle of that landmass, which embraces most of the world's landmass, most of the world's population, and most of the world's natural resources, thereby highlighting that landmass, again, the Earth or World Island, as the key to world domination for generations of geopoliticians. Across the middle of that landmass is a wide swath of Muslim population, and the Muslim population overlaps to a considerable extent of the presence of fossil fuels and petroleum in particular. For that reason, not only the Muslim population, but in particular that portion of the Muslim population that was open to the corporatist economics and fascist rallying ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood was a particular note for our purposes here. So again, we've done a number of shows about what I call the Earth Island Boogie. This is updating it. And with our three articles talking about the evolution of the Pan-Turkist / Crimean Tatar Third Reich link beginning during World War II and the run-up to World War II, then continuing to the Cold War period and the post-World War II period, and finally evolving right on up through the present period with the Federal Republic of Germany and the EU, and no doubt the U.S. and elements of its intelligence services are once again carrying on that dynamic.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
The first of these articles, Auxiliary Troops Against Moscow, Part 1, from GermanForeignPolicy.com, from May 17th of 2016. One of Berlin's government advisors is calling for Russia's expulsion from the Council of Europe. The Russian government's actions against the Crimean Tatars and its banning their Mezhlis, M-E-G-L-I-S, by the way, I'm probably mispronouncing many of these Crimean Tatar names, both the names of organizations and the names of individuals, beginning again. The Russian government's actions against the Crimean Tatars and its banning their Mezhlis, M-E-J-L-I-S, a political organization, along with other measures, make it, quote, no longer possible to justify continuing Russian membership in the Council of Europe, according to a current position statement published by the German Institute for International Security, International and Security Affairs, or SWP. This demand is made at a time when the Crimean Tatars have been drawn into the spotlight throughout Europe by the openly politicized Eurovision Song Contest, or ESC. Whereas public perception of Crimean Tatars has been predominated by their 1944 deportation, their collaboration with the Nazis, which had preceded their deportation, has been obscured. As historians have ascertained in 1942, quote, every 10th Tatar on the Crimean Peninsula was in the military on the side of Nazi Germany. Crimean Tatars fought on the side of the German Wehrmacht against the Soviet Union, excelling in the notorious, quote, efforts to crush the partisan movement, unquote, and turn their Jewish neighbors over to the Nazis' henchmen. Already in the 1920s, leading Tatar functionaries had complained of a Jewification, unquote, of their communities in their protests against Moscow's resettlement measures of Jewish families. Later, exiled Crimean Tatars volunteered their services for the West's Cold War efforts to destabilize Moscow. The Mezhlis, which today is quite controversial among the Crimean Tatars, stands in this tradition. We're going to talk more about the split among the Crimean Tatar population vis-a-vis the Mezhlis in our next article. Continuing with part one of Auxiliary Troops against Moscow. In the current position statement, Susan Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, doesn't sound German to me, an expert on Eastern Europe at the Chancellery-financed German Institute for International and Security Affairs, or SWP, makes a plea for expelling Russia from the Council of Europe. Stewart alleges, quote, Russia's destructive stance in the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe has been repeatedly demonstrated, for example, by forging coalitions, unquote, with groups like the British conservatives, unquote. In addition, first, the country passed a law in December of 2015 permitting Russia's constitutional court to, quote, ignore rulings of the ECTHR if they contradict the Constitution of the Russian Federation, unquote. Second, it has applied measures against the political representatives of the Crimean Tatars and in April, quote, banned the elected representation of the Crimean Tatars, the Mezhlis, as an extremist organization, unquote. Stewart declared, quote, given this combination, it is no longer possible to justify continuing Russian membership in the Council of Europe, unquote. This demand from the SWP is being made at the moment when the Crimean Tatars and their deportation in 1944 have been drawn into the spotlight throughout Europe by the openly politicized Eurovision Song Contest, or ESC. This is obscuring from public awareness the Crimean-Tatarian collaboration with the Nazis and the Nazi regime's successful efforts to manipulate that minority to serve German foreign policy objectives. Immediately following the invasion of the Soviet Union, and even more so by the end of 1941, when it became clear that, unlike France a year earlier, this new Soviet adversary could not be conquered in a blitzkrieg, unquote, Berlin began forging plans for winning over Soviet linguistic minorities or Volksgruppen to collaborate with the Nazis in their war against Moscow. The attention of strategists in the German Foreign Ministry and in the Reich Ministry for the Occupied Eastern Territories fell in part on the approximately 200,000 Crimean Tatars. The idea was encouraged by the hope that, with the Tatars' help, officially neutral Turkey could also be won over to enter the war. Ankara saw itself as the protective power for Turkic-speaking minorities, including the Tatar linguistic group on the Crimean Peninsula. The Foreign Ministry established its first contacts to Turkish generals favorable to Tatarian interests. In December of 1941, they brought two exiled Crimean Tatarian politicians living in Turkey to Berlin to plan the collaboration. At first, the Nazi leadership was hesitant to do so. The original plan had been to banish the entire Crimean population, including the Tatars, to prepare the peninsula for the settlement of Volksdeutschen, or ethnic Germans, from South Tyrol, and annex the peninsula into the German Reich. However, because the war was not progressing as expected, Adolf Hitler agreed on January 2, 1942, to the recruitment of Tatarian soldiers into the Wehrmacht, and on January 18th, the creation as well of Tatarian combat units. The Battle Group D, as in dog, began immediately to recruit Crimean Tatar volunteers for the war against the Soviet Union. In December of 1941, this battle group had massacred more than 13,000 people, 11,000 Jews, and over 800 Roma gypsies in Simferopol, Crimea. The battle group recruited 9,225 Tatarians from 200 communities and 5 prisoner of war camps and joined the war on the side of the Wehrmacht. Another 1,632 formed Tatar Vigilante Companies, unquote, and under Battle Group D's command were deployed in the notorious anti-partisan campaigns. By the way, the anti-partisan warfare on the Eastern Front was epically brutal. We haven't got time to go into detail here, but it involved some of the most extreme savageries of World War II, and those were very extreme indeed. Continuing with this article, according to information provided by historian Manfred Oldenburg, O-L-D-E-N-B-U-R-G, by March, the number of Tatar recruits in this war of annihilation against the Soviet Union had grown to 20,000. Oldenburg concludes, quote, that means that every 10th Tatar on the Crimean Peninsula was in the military fighting on the side of Nazi Germany. There were, however, also Crimean and Tatars, quote, who were not at all interested in collaboration with the Germans, unquote, and others who, as loyal Soviet citizens, quote, were just as relentlessly persecuted as the other enemy groups on the Crimea, explains Oldenburg. However, quote, in spite of occasional evidence for passive or anti-German behavior, unquote, the Wehrmacht considered the Tatars in their majority as loyal and anti-Bolshevist allies, unquote. Particularly their, quote, courageous commitment in the anti-partisan campaign, unquote, won them great respect. And again, the anti-partisan warfare on the Eastern Front in World War II was incredibly brutal. Continuing. In return for their collaboration, the Nazi occupiers permitted the Crimean Tatars special privileges. Quote, Tatarian elementary schools were opened, Tatarian journals and magazines were allowed, and a national Tatarian theater was organized, unquote, Manfred Oldenburg reports. Around 50 mosques were reopened. By the end of 1941, the Crimean Tatars were allowed to form their local councils, quote, to administer their school, scholastic, religious, and cultural affairs. In the hopes of a more comprehensive self-administration, quote, a large number of Tatars were prepared to collaborate with the German occupying forces, unquote. Also in late 1941, the Nazi occupation troops began firing ethnic Russians, quote, on a wide scale from their positions in administrations and the businesses, replacing them, quote, with collaborating Crimean Tatars, writes Oldenburg. Motivated by this preferential treatment, the Tatars began to, quote, develop a feeling of superiority, particularly regarding ethnic Russians, unquote, which quickly led to rebellion within the Slavic population, unquote. At the same time, Berlin brought Crimean Tatars into the German Reich to be on hand for relevant contacts and other assistance. This led at the initiative of the Reich Ministry of the Occupied Eastern Territories to the creation of a Crimean Tatar Central Office, unquote. On March 17, 1945, with an order from Berlin, the Crimean Tatar National Committee was recognized by the Ostministerium, the Ministry of the Occupied Eastern Territories, as the independent representative of its people. The Tatars' collaboration was that much easier because of an obviously strong anti-Semitism. It has been reported that complaints had been made to Battlegroup D about the measures taken by the Soviet government back in the 1920s. In 1924, Moscow began resettling Jews from regions of Ukraine and Belarus to Crimea. Leading functionaries of the Crimean Tatars protested against what they referred to as the Jewification of the Crimean Peninsula, calling instead for a resettlement of Tatars from Turkey and elsewhere to Crimea. Quote, anti-Semitic feelings were also evident among the Tatars, unquote, according to an internal report by Soviet officials who then began to rigidly impose the resettlement measures and suppress anti-Semitic resistance. Oldenburg reports that for the period after late 1941, unquote, many Tatars carried the same disdain for Jews as they had for the Bolsheviks. They denounced Jews to the military administration who had been able to escape ghettoization measures and subsequent mass executions. From 1942 to 1944, Crimean Tatar propaganda sheets reported benevolently on lectures with titles such as The Jews Are the Enemy of All Peoples, unquote, where it was alleged that Jews, quote, are bloodthirsty savages, unquote, and that now a total war, unquote, must be waged against, quote, Jewish Bolshevism, unquote. In the campaign to free the Crimean Peninsula from Nazi terror, supported by Crimean Tatars, more than 200,000 Soviet soldiers and partisans, 20,500 prisoners of war, and 8,000 civilian prisoners, 38,000 Jews, as well as thousands of Roma gypsies, were killed. When the occupiers were finally forced to retreat, they left scorched earth behind and the destruction of 80 Crimean Tatar settlements, murdering a large segment of those inhabitants. This was how the occupiers expressed their gratitude for the Crimean Tatars' collaboration. German efforts to manipulate the Crimean Tatars for German foreign policy objectives had not ended with Germany's defeat in World War II. The Federal Republic of Germany continued these efforts under altered conditions, as GermanForeignPolicy.com will soon report. Yes, indeed. And the second of those reports, Auxiliary Forces Against Moscow, Part 2, from GermanForeignPolicy.com of the following day, that being May 18th of 2016. Now, we're going to be talking again about the continuity between Third Reich policy in the Crimean Peninsula and elsewhere, there where there were Turkic-speaking peoples, and the post-World War II Cold War policy as pursued by the Gehlen Org, by the Federal Republic of Germany, by the CIA and Frank Wisner's OPC, and also by the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and the World Anti-Communist League. Now, note, front and center here is the Mezhlis. I may be mispronouncing that. The M-E-J, as in John, L-I-S, a Crimean Tatar organization that is banned in Russia and supported by Berlin, enjoys the support of some Crimean Tatars and not others. The dynamic behind that reported as follows. By the way, one of the really important names to listen to is Gerhard von Mende. He was a fellow we looked at great length in For the Record 720, dealing with our treatment of the book A Mosque in Munich by Ian Johnson. He, as we shall review, was coordinating the use of various Soviet minorities, ethnic minorities, as part of, again, auxiliary forces against Moscow. He did that during the Second World War. He then did the same thing during the Cold War, and his policies are being perpetuated by Turkey and the Federal Republic of Germany, elements of CIA and NATO. Auxiliary Forces Against Moscow, from GermanForeignPolicy.com, from May 18th to 2016. The Mezhlis, a Crimean Tatar organization banned in Russia but supported by Berlin, has announced its plans to open official representative offices in Brussels and Washington this autumn, emphasizing particularly the importance of a seat in Brussels. The Mezhlis, presented in the West as the only legitimate representative body of the Crimean Tatars, is actually only representing the pro-Western tendency among them, while another tendency with pro-Russian leanings has for years explicitly rejected its policy. This split among Crimean Tatars hails back to the final years of the Cold War, when the longtime Western ally and subsequently Mezhlis chairman Mustafa Mustafa, Cemilev, Cemilev, supported radical demands for autonomy while pursuing a tough anti-Russian course. When, in the 1960s, Cemilev began his campaign for Crimean Tatar autonomy in the Soviet Union, he was given Western support aimed at weakening the Soviet adversary from within. At the same time, Crimean Tatars exiled in the Federal Republic of Germany were pursuing the same objective, quote, Russia's national decomposition, unquote, as it was referred to at the time. A Crimean Tatar who had served as a main liaison to the Nazis, subsequently continuing his collaborationist activities in the Federal Republic of Germany, assisted them, and, beginning in the 1950s, to also work for CIA-financed organizations in Munich. And again, no surprise here, this is a pattern we have looked at before. Continuing. The efforts of the Federal Republic of Germany, along with other Western countries, particularly the U.S., to use the Crimean Tatars for their foreign policy goals during the Cold War, were based on the conditions resulting from the Tatars' 1941 to 1944 collaboration with the Nazi occupiers. In May of 1944, in reaction to this collaboration, the Soviet government deported some 200,000 Crimean Tatars to the Central Asian regions of the Soviet Union, particularly what is today Uzbekistan, under deplorable conditions. Numerous Tatars died during or shortly after the deportation. There is no reliable count on the number of victims. In the early 1960s, Crimean Tatar activists began demanding the right of return to Crimea in combination with the demand for political autonomy, which was of particular interest to Western powers. Aiming at weakening Moscow, Western powers had already supported Ukrainian nationalists into the 1950s, fighting with every means for Ukraine's secession from the Soviet Union. Following the Soviet administration's suppression of the Ukrainian unrest, the Crimean Tatars' quest for autonomy offered the West a new chance to foment another hotbed of instability on the adversary's soil. Mustafa Gemilev, today still one of Germany's most important Crimean Tatar contacts for its foreign policy, played a prominent role in this context. Already in 1961 and 62, Gemilev was at the forefront in the struggle for autonomy when, at the age of 18, he co-founded the Union of Crimean Tatar Youth, unquote. He intensified this struggle after Moscow in 1967 exonerated the Tatar minority from the accusation of collective Nazi collaboration. In the 1970s, he became publicly known in the West as a comrade in arms of Andrei Sakharov, the Soviet dissident and Nobel Peace Prize laureate. At the same time, Gemilev's hunger strike and other protests of Crimean Tatars were reported on in the West. Gemilev was arrested in 1974 for having planned to present U.S. President Richard Nixon a petition on the situation of the Crimean Tatars during his forthcoming Moscow visit. It had been planned as a publicity stunt and an appeal to put pressure on the Soviet government. In 1986, after numerous arrests, he was granted an early release due to U.S. President Ronald Reagan's intervention on his behalf. People like Gemilev played an important role in Western efforts to foment unrest in the Soviet Union. On the other hand, the West could use them on the international stage to accuse Moscow of repression when it reacted with the anticipated police and Secret Service measures. Western governments have always tried to instrumentalize exiled Crimean Tatars for their own policies, for interfering in Soviet affairs, or at least for their propaganda. Edige or Edige, E-D-I-G-E, Kirimal, K-I-R-I-M-A-L, again, I'm probably mispronouncing many or most or all of these Crimean Tatar names. Edige Kirimal, who lived in the Federal Republic of Germany, was one of the most influential exiled Crimean Tatars. Born in 1911, he grew up on the Crimean Peninsula and fled in the 1930s to Istanbul, Turkey, where he contacted prominent Crimean Tatar exiled politicians. In late 1941, Kirimal and another exiled Crimean Tatar were passed on to Berlin by the German ambassador to Turkey, Franz von Papen, to assist in planning the collaboration on the Crimea. Kirimal remained in the Reich as the main liaison between the Nazi regime and the Crimean Tatars, headed the Crimean Tatar Central Office, and, just before the end of the war, was named president of a Crimean Tatar National Committee by his probably most important contact in Berlin, Gerhard von Mende. Again, interrupting briefly, for a lot about von Mende, take a look at Further Record 720. Von Mende worked in the Reich Ministry for the Occupied Eastern Territory, first as head of the Caucasus Turkestan Division, and beginning in 1943, as head of the Directorate Three Foreign Peoples. He was considered the most important strategist for the political instrumentalization of Soviet linguistic minorities. He proposed their recruitment as Nazi collaborators to deploy them as auxiliary forces in the battle against Moscow. After World War II, Gerhard von Mende once again placed his knowledge and networks at the disposal of the struggle against the Soviet Union. However, this time it was for the Bonn government and its new Western allies. The Nazis' liaison, Kiramal, is one of the people with whom Mende was still cooperating. After the Second World War, Kiramal sought to make a name for himself as a publicist on themes concerning Crimean Tatars. Mende promoted and wrote the preface to his first major work entitled The National Struggle of the Crimean Turks, unquote, that he published in 1952. In late 1952, Der Spiegel reflected in a publicity review of the book, quote, "In his book, Kiramal touches on the timeless dilemma of every adversary of Russia. How can this colossus be brought down? Should Moscow's centralism be accepted, or rather the centrifugal nationalist forces within the Russian realm be promoted?" Unquote. Kiramal obviously tended to favor the second approach, as did Mende. Quote, "Kiramal's book was prefaced by Professor Gerhard von Mende, the advisor of Alfred Rosenberg, Reich Minister for the Occupied Eastern Territories." Der Spiegel continued, "Von Mende was, and evidently remained, a supporter of, quote, Russia's national decomposition, unquote, which means the dismemberment of this huge empire into as many national mini-states as possible. Mende's protege, Kiramal, has been working in line with this strategy since the 1950s for the Munich-based, CIA-financed Radio Free Europe, alongside various other activists from Mende's ethnic minorities networks." Parenthetically, very quickly, we have looked at the Galen influence in the forming of Radio Free Europe, and again in examining the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, we have taken a look at the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which oversees Radio Free Europe, among other CIA-linked radio and broadcasting propaganda fronts, and we have noted that the so-called privacy advocates are almost all associated with the BBG. And we've noted that it was L'Affaire Snowden, Snowden's ride, that brought an end to the Obama administration's attempted reboot with Russia. So note here, Kiramal and von Mende working with Radio Free Europe. I don't think it is too much of a reach to see these same networks evolving into the present period, and one of the facets of that evolution being the Snowden operation, one of the Conga Line ops.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Continuing with this article. Later, von Mende worked for the Munich-based, also CIA-financed, Institute for USSR Studies, where he published the journal DERGI, D-E-R-G-I. Munich's anti-communist exile circles, in which Kiramal was circulating, included Ukrainian fascists, a milieu with which Crimean Tatars in the Gemelev entourage were recently cooperating to blockade the Crimean Peninsula. More about that later. Whereas Kiramal, who died in 1980, did not live to see the demise of the Soviet Union, Gemelev could benefit from the lifting of the official territorial ban in 1989, barring the return of the Crimean Tatars, and he resettled on the Crimean Peninsula. Since then, a split developed among the Tatars of Crimea, which still today is having grave political consequences. In 1988, Yuri Yuri Osmanov, O-S-M-A-N-O-V as in Victor, one of the most famous Crimean Tatar leaders besides Gemelev, founded the National Crimean Tatar Movement, or NDKT. Whereas Osmanov and the NDKT were satisfied with the right to return to Crimea, favoring a thriving cooperation with the other ethnic groups and with the authorities, the Crimean Tatar National Movement, the more radical organization under Mustafa Gemalev's leadership, split off in 1989. Gemalev and the OKND explicitly demanded ethnically defined privileges, a Crimean Tatar autonomy, unquote, and to add emphasis to their demand, convened in 1991 a Kurultay, K-U-R-U-L-T-A-Y, a Crimean Tatar National Assembly that would elect the Majlis, unquote, to serve as the Crimean Tatar's exclusive ruling body. On the other hand, Osmanov and the NDKT sought good relations with Russia, not least of all because of the traditionally strong Russian influence on Crimea, while Gemalev and his OKND were on a pro-Western course in opposition to Moscow. In 1991, Gemalev was elected chair of the Majlis. Osmanov was killed in 1993 by unknown assassins. At the beginning of the 1990s, the Majlis was much more popular than the NDKT among Crimea's Tatars, but times have changed. The Ukraine Analysen, a publication of the University of Bremen, noted by late 2010, Majlis, quote, support was dwindling among Crimean Tatars, unquote, and new actors who no longer agree with the Majlis leadership role, unquote, have appeared on the political stage. The fact that the organization has, quote, lost its monopolizing position, unquote, and no longer rallies the support of the majority of Crimean Tatars is generally ignored in the West. Ukraine Analysen makes references to the Mili Shirka Party, M-I-L-L-I-F-I-R-Q-A Party, founded in 2006 under the auspices of the NDKT, which from the beginning took a pro-Russian stand contrary to that of the Majlis, which accepts support from Erdogan's Turkey and promoted the forces behind the Orange Revolution. We looked at the Orange Revolution. That is one of the Conga Line ops. Over the years, this polarization among Crimea's Tatars has been growing stronger. In May of 2013, even before the Maidan protests began, the Jamestown Foundation in the USA reported on escalating tensions between the two factions. These tensions escalated with the Maidan protests and Crimea's subsequent secession. Mili Shirka opposed the Maidan protests, campaigned for participation in the secession referendum, and for the peninsula's incorporation into Russia. The Majlis supported Maidan and called for a boycott of the referendum. Gemalev even called on NATO to consider intervening on the Crimean Peninsula. Gemalev and the Majlis are still fighting for the restitution of Crimea to Ukraine. They are not adverse to the use of violence to reach those objectives. Last fall, their activists, with the support of Ukrainian fascists, parenthetically from Pravi Sektor, blockaded Crimea, setting up roadblocks to stop commodities from reaching the peninsula and cutting off the electrical supply by blowing up electric pylons. This caused serious damage to the Crimean population. Russian authorities ruled that the Majlis is a terrorist organization and therefore outlawed it beginning on April 26th. The organization, on the other hand, has announced its intention of setting up representative offices in Washington, but particularly, unquote, in Brussels, which is a clear indication of its intention to serve the West even more loyally as an auxiliary force against Russia. GermanForeignPolicy.com will report on this soon. And indeed they did. 2 days later, we have Auxiliary Forces Against Moscow, Part 3, from GermanForeignPolicy.com of May 20th of 2016. By the way, we took a look at the Pravi Sektor Crimean Tatar collaboration to blockade Crimea and to cut off its power supply by blowing up power pylons in FTR 878.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
I will also note that in addition to Crimean Tatars being supported by Turkey, Grey Wolf pan-Turkist fascist elements are also working against both Russia and China, and Alparslan Türkeş, the founder of the National Action Party, of which the Grey Wolves is the youth wing, was very active in support of trying to get Turkey to ally with the Axis. From Auxiliary Forces Against Moscow, Part 3, GermanForeignPolicy.com, May 20th. Despite its involvement in violent activities, Berlin is intensifying its cooperation with the Crimean Tatars' Mezhlis. Just recently, Mezhlis chairman Rafat Shubarov, C-H-U-B-A-R-O-V, visited Germany's Ministry of Foreign Affairs for political consultations. The talks were obviously not hampered by the fact that last September, Shubarov had announced a blockade of Ukrainian trade with Crimea, and that in October, he had explicitly praised the blockade's grave consequences on the Crimean population, the shortages, and significant price increases for staple foods. The German Foreign Ministry does not feel compelled to distance itself from the Mezhlis, even after their activists blew up electric pylons, causing extensive interruptions in the electrical supply to Crimea. German ethnicist organizations had established good relations with Shubarov and his predecessor Mustafa Gemalev already years ago, intensifying these since 2010 to fortify anti-Russian circles following Kiev's change of government. Even though quite controversial among the Crimean Tatars, this cooperation with the Mezhlis milieu is closely coordinated with the USA, with Turkey under Erdogan, and other NATO member countries. The concurrency of the cooperation with the Crimean Tatars and their occasional violent protests is reminiscent of developments in Ukraine in the spring of 2013. The official German relations with the Crimean Tatars Mezhlis can build on a basis that had already been established over the years with ethnicist organizations. For example, the Society for Threatened Peoples, or GFPV, which is promoting special rights of ethnically defined minorities around the world, has long been in contact with Mezhlis. In 2005, it awarded Mustafa Gemalev, Mezhlis' chairman at the time, the Victor Gonzalez Prize. Erika Steinbach of the CDU, at the time president of the German League of Ex-Palais, held the laudation. The GFPV is not only engaged in public relations for the Crimean Tatars, it also helps Mezhlis with contacts to the German Ministry of Foreign Affairs. In the summer of 2009, GFPV participated in talks between a delegation of Tatars living in Germany and the Foreign Ministry. Subsequently, the relevant bodies in the Foreign Ministry promised to provide, quote, advice in the search for German political and diplomatic partners, unquote. The Federal Union of European Nationalities, or FUEV, headquartered in Flensburg and is in cooperation with Germany's Ministry of the Interior. Its members include ethnicist organizations from around Europe in the Caucasus and Central Asia. The FUEV has accepted the Mezhlis as a member and promotes its interests. In 2011, it supported Mustafa Gemalev's nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize. Gemalev was Mezhlis's chair at the time. He had repeatedly participated in FUEV's Congress. After pro-Western President Viktor Yushchenko lost elections in 2010, attempts were made to embrace German Crimean Tatar contacts also at the state level. This was part of the effort to reinforce on all levels those promoting Ukraine's association with the EU. This was when the CDU-affiliated Konrad Adenauer Foundation began supporting the UDAR party of the future leader of the Maidan protests, Vitali Klitschko, and when Berlin and Brussels were pushing for Ukraine to sign the EU Association Agreement. On June 28th and 29th, 2011, the first German-Crimean Patriot Dialogue, unquote, was convened in Berlin, co-organized by the GFBV. According to a report, the cooperation must ultimately, quote, discuss the Crimean issue as part of the rapprochement with EU structures. During this, quote, dialogue, unquote, Mezlis chair at the time, Zhemilev, his successor since 2013, Rafat Chubarov, and Mezlis's head of external relations, Ali Kamzin, held informal talks with German Bundestag parliamentarians and representatives of the German foreign and interior ministries. Within the framework of the third German-Crimean Tatar dialogue on September 19th of 2013, with Crimean Tatar politicians also in attendance, the Federal College for Security Studies in Berlin, or BAKS, placed its rooms at their disposal for discussions of Crimean Tatar issues. BAKS serves as a strategic planning center for foreign and military police. Since Crimea's reintegration into Russia, German-Crimean Tatar relations have rapidly intensified at the official level. However, German politicians and officials are only in contact with Mezlis and its sympathizers. Crimean Tatar forces that reject Mezlis's pro-Western and anti-Russian policies are being largely ignored by Berlin, Brussels, and Washington. Already on April 10, 2014, Erika Steinbach, chair of the Human Rights Working Group of the CDU-CSU Parliamentary Group, met in Berlin for talks with Mezlis's head of external relations, Ali Kamzin. Early July of 2014, CSU parliamentarian Bernd Fabricius, who later succeeded Steinbach as BDD president, met with former Mezlis chair Zhemilev in Strasbourg. During a brief visit to Ukraine on July 23rd and 24th of 2014, a delegation of the European People's Party, or EPP, in which the German CDU and CSU hold strong positions, met with Crimean Tatar representatives. From March 17th of 2015, the Konrad Adenauer Foundation in Brussels had announced an exclusive, quote, Adenauer Forum, unquote, with former Mezlis chair Zhemilev. Participation by personal invitation only, unquote. On October 21st of 2015, the Berlin headquarters of the Konrad Adenauer Foundation organized a panel discussion with Mezlis chair Chubarov with various representatives of Berlin's foreign policy establishment participating. Simultaneously, the Crimean Tatars have strengthened their relations with other EU and NATO countries. In April of 2014, immediately following Crimea's reintegration into Russia, former Mezlis chair Zhemilev flew to Washington for political consultations, where he also met on April 4th with Wendy Sherman, Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs in the State Department. In late September of 2015, Mezlis chair Chubarov also flew to the U.S. Capitol for political consultations. In December of 2015, Zhemilev and Chubarov met in Ankara with President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoglu. This meeting was of particular importance because Turkey sees itself as the protective power, unquote, for the Turkish-speaking Crimean Tatars and has a strong interest in assembling anti-Russian allies due to the escalation of its conflict with Russia. Zhemilev not only has several honorary doctorates in Turkey, he was awarded Turkey's highest order of merit on April 15, 2014. On June 3rd of 2014, he was awarded the first Lech Walesa Solidarity Prize in Poland as well. The fact that its activists occasionally use violence is no obstacle to the expansion of their anti-Moscow cooperation with the Crimean Tatar Mezlis. On September 16th of 2015, Mezlis chair Chubarov announced that, beginning September 20th, Crimean Tatars would block Crimea's commodity trade with Ukraine. The blockade was actually installed, having a serious impact on the entire Crimean population. On October 8th, Shubarov praised that illegal measure because it caused serious shortages and price increases for basic foods in Crimea, and has returned the issue of Crimea to the center of attention of the international community. Just 4 days later, at the Kiev talks organized by the Konrad Adenauer Foundation, the FDP-affiliated Friedrich Naumann Foundation, and the Green Party-affiliated Heinrich Böll Foundation, quote, with the gracious support of the foreign ministry, unquote, Shubarov engaged in talks with Rebecca Harms, whip of the European Parliament Green Caucus, Johannes Regenbrecht, head of the German Foreign Ministry's Ukraine Task Force, and with Michael Link, also a German, director of the OSCE's Office for Democratic Institutions and Human Rights. The blockade, erected by the Tatars and Ukrainian right-sector fascists against the Crimean civilian population, was continued. Again, this last sentence, it's important. The blockade, erected by the Tatars and Ukrainian right-sector fascists against the Crimean civilian population, was continued. Just a few days after Shubarov and Gemilov had held talks on the deoccupation of Crimea with Federica Mogherini, the EU's head of foreign policy, on November 9th, activists blew up electrical pylons in southern Ukraine, cutting off Crimea's electrical power supply almost completely. That, by the way, November 9th, is the German Day of Destiny. The concurrence of violent protests on the one hand and negotiations with German and EU politicians on the other is dreadfully reminiscent of earlier Ukrainian developments. From December 2012 to May of 2013, a year before the Maidan revolts, parliamentary and street protests were accompanied by talks between German and EU diplomats and members of the opposition. What happened in Ukraine thereafter is well known. Berlin is intensifying its contacts. As the Ukrainian embassy in the German capital announced at the end of April, Shubarov had just participated in a forum of discussion at the German Council on Foreign Relations, or MGAP, having exchanged views particularly with politicians and diplomats in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Following that event, Barbel Koffler, K-O-F-L-E-R, the German government's commissioner for human rights, issued an appeal in the media on behalf of the Crimean Tatars. According to the Ukrainian embassy, this was the first direct echo, unquote, of the talks Shubarov had had with German diplomats. What else was discussed remains unknown. And there are supplemental articles in the description for the show about the private sector and Crimean Tatar collaboration in both sabotaging the electrical pylons and in blockading truck traffic into and out of Crimea. Note that the sabotage of the pylons took place on November 9th. That is the German Day of Destiny. We will be carrying on this discussion about the Earth Island Boogie in future programs. However, this concludes For the Record program number 911. Titled The Crimean Tatars, Pan-Turkism, and the Underground Reich. Update on the Earth Island Boogie. This is being recorded on May 26th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.